Exit number 12211, rail 1.
Mr. Biggs, rail 1. Whereabouts were you born, please?
I was born at 2 Wembley Street in the centre of Plymouth, which is now near enough to the bottom of the Royal Parade.
Which year was that?
That was the year 1919.
What did your father do for a living?
My father was a merchant navy officer, which after the First World War could not get no work as a merchant navy engineer, and he went to America and jumped ship.
And there he... So how was it that you weren't born in America then?
My mother already had the children, Omir, which was 6, and one was already she was pregnant for the Samt when he jumped the ship in America.
Did you go to school in Plymouth?
I went to school in Plymouth, in Union Street School, not until the age of 14.
Did you get a job when you left?
When I left the school, I got a job just as ordinary errand boy, milk rounds, and things like that.
So how did you come to be in the Navy?
Well, then, when I became 16, I went into the Royal Dockyard. And while I was there, practically all my life, I decided I wished to join the Navy.
What job were you doing in the dockyard?
I was a fitter's mate in the dockyard. I went in as a boy, training to be a fitter's mate, and then go to a crane driver and things like that.
But you thought that it would be better to be at sea?
Far better. I enjoyed it all my life, and I learnt all about it from the dockyard. All my people were in the Navy, my uncles and my father.
How did you go about joining up?
Well, the unfortunate thing was, owing to money reasons, I could not join when I was 18 because I had no father at home, having to assist in keeping my mother and family. So I had to wait until I was 18 and 6 months before I could join. So I applied, joined the Navy as an ordinary stoker, which my people in the dockyard was very much against.
Why was that?
Well, because they thought I would have a better career in the dockyard.
That was in 38?
That was in 38.
Was it easy to get in?
Not easy in the engine room branch at those days, because the engine room branch was a specialised branch and you had to sign for 12 years, whereas the seaman's branch, cooks and things like that, only signed for 7 and 5 reserve.
Where did you do your training, initial training?
Naval training at the Drake, HMS Drake in Denport, which then had just, engine room branch training had just moved from the old fort up above St. Budo.
What did you think of the training that you got at Drake?
Very good indeed for the application of the day.
How were you treated?
Very well indeed. The difference was that I joined the Navy in those days knowing what the Navy was all about. But very many of the friends had joined with me. We were given until we joined on the Monday, and as naval people were never sworn men with the King's shilling, you were given till the Thursday of that week before you were issued with uniform, and then you went before the commander and he read you the articles of war to say that you were officially into the Navy. Then you were marched to the recruiting office. They issued you your clothes, took all your civilian clothes away, put them in the cardboard boxes and sent them to your own. And from then on, you were never allowed to wear civilians by law or order until you had 7 days leave. And then, but there were several men who came and joined because there was no work. They had families. There was no marriage allowance in them days, but they joined the services just so they could take the meal, feeding and things like this away from their families of Yorkshire, Lancashire, and all these sort of things, from the pit people. Friends of mine, I had a young lad with me. He had never had a job officially in his life, but he'd been down a mine 4 years. He went with his father on shift, and because he was a small lad, he earned tonnage of money for his father. And that's who joined the Navy by the 100 in them days. Marriage allowance you never got until you were 25. So the men that were married that joined just got their only half a crown a day.
Did you have any complaints about the training that you received at Trey?
None at all. Not for my job.
How did the recruits get on with each other?
Very well indeed. We were in classes of about 40. We went into what was known as a new entry mess when you joined. And then from there, you done your training for 8 weeks. You learned rifle training, like what they call field training, under the gunners, the GIs of the Seaman's branch. And also you done your 6 or 8 weeks engineering course. You learned how to shovel coal by shoving pebbles through an hole and shoveling them back again to go onto coal ships. And also you learned all about the modern engineering of the day, which was all fired boilers. And we done very good training indeed. After the 8 weeks, you went up into the new entry messes, that they were called, and then you became available for draft.
Did you think that a war was coming?
At that time, no, because it was talking in Europe. Hitler was on the move when I joined the Navy in 38. We had we went to Germany and came back with peace in our time. But that was after I went to, I went out in 38 to the Orion.
Can you tell me about joining the Orion?
Oh yes, I was drafted to the Orion from the Naval Barracks. I was the only engine room branch that went, but there were several seamen and others, because the Orion at that time on the West Indies station was also a training ship for different branches. You went out to Earth, they'd done 6 months training, and then others came, and so many were sent home each time. But we were drafted with our kits, and we caught the train to Liverpool, and I went out on a ship belonging to the Union Pacific Line called the Orbita, a steamship called the Orbita. And she was contracted by the Navy the old time. She carried crew members out and crew members home. But there was also five of the ships, I think. There was the Orluna, the Orduna, the Orbita, and the Rio del Pacifico. She was a modern ship of the day. And that was their job, running to South America, and they stopped in to Bermuda on the way down.
Was it a pleasant cruise for you?
Very. It was a marvellous cruise for the likes of me, who just lived from hand to mouth all my life. It was like living in luxury. But today, it would be just a tramp steamer, in other words.
Were you properly fed in the Navy in those days?
Yes, properly fed. If you could eat the food, and you liked that sort of food.
What was wrong
foods with it? Well, there was nothing wrong with it, but foods to me, lots of things I couldn't eat. But otherwise, food, yes. And I've never heard of anybody in any way starving or wanting to. But whenever you had a shilling, you always went ashore and bought a good slap-up feed. In the likes of Jamaica and places like that, you could buy food dirt cheap.
What was it that you couldn't eat?
Well, it was a terrific amount of herrings in and sardines and all these sort of things for evening meals, you know, Sundays and all this sort of thing. Cheese and all that sort of thing. You had plenty of that, but otherwise you had meals. It was satisfactory.
What kind of a ship was the Orion to live on and to work on?
Very well put about, because she was one of the advanced ships of the day. She was doing a lot of advance in engine room boiler equipment and things like that.
Was it a happy ship?
Very, very happy indeed. And if you talk to any of my ex-members and also the Orion Association, you'll find men on her from the time she commissioned until she was scrapped were happy the old time. She was what was known as a nappy ship.
How did the ratings get on with the petty officers and officers?
A different system to today, but got on very well. I mean, no petty officer was allowed by ruling to drink with the ordinary stokers or seamen. You all had your place, and that's how it was. But it was a very happy. You were looked after. The POs were good. They knew their job. And that was how things went. But if you went ashore, there was never no trouble, never no arguments. The old time I was in the Orion, I hardly ever known a fight or any trouble at all between senior ratings and junior ratings.
What duties did the Orion have based in Bermuda?
Originally, there was, as the cruiser out there, she was what was known as showing the flag for the old period. She went out there in 1937, and it was a 2.5 year commission. There was 4 other cruisers there, Ajax, Exeter, Ajax, Exeter, and I can't remember the Dorsetshire, I think was there. But the old role of the ships then was showing the flags around the old of the American coast, north and south, and the islands. Trinidad, Jamaica, Cuba, St. Kitts, San Dominica was what was known as the island cruise, Havana in Cuba. And then you had the West Coast cruise, North America, which started at San Diego and went all the way up to Seattle, Esquimalt and Victoria in Canada. Then there was the East Coast of America, where you went to New York, all the way up through into Canada, to Halifax, Quebec, Montreal. Then you went to the same on the South runs. You went down Montevideo and all these, right down to the Falklands. So therefore, the 5 cruisers at all times were on showing the flag. And then after, say, 3 months on cruise, you came back and you had your regattas and your get-togethers in Bermuda and fleet training. The Canadian ships used to come into the Caribbean and do maneuvers. French cruisers used to come there and do maneuvers. I remember 1939, I think, prior to the war, the 2 modern French cruisers, the Foch and the Duplay. I ain't quite sure of the pronunciation.
Yes.
They came there, and they were the most modern French cruisers of the day. And they were doing maneuvers with us. But it was very remarkable, because the men of the French Navy was worse paid than the men of the British Navy. Because at those days, which I think today, they were all conscripts. Their wives were issued the money in France, and all the crew got was what was allowed as spending money. Well, one came ashore into the canteen in Bermuda with us. We had to buy their entertainment out of the canteen funds of the ships.
Did you come into contact with the German Navy in the Americas?
No, not at all. I can't remember ever seeing a German ship. Except, because at the World's Exposition that we went to in San Francisco, just prior to the war, there should have been German, of all nations, German ships and ships of all nations, but the German ship never arrived, as far as I can tell. I'm sure there was no German ship at the World's Exposition at San Francisco or New York.
What about your job on board in those days? What would it involve?
Well, I joined as a second-class stoker. And the old basics from then on is your training for advancement to higher ratings. And so when I passed from a second-class stoker, from engine room and boiler room training, became a first-class stoker, or a stoker one, whichever way they pronounced it, then you'd go on training for all auxiliary watches on evaporators, on your steering engines, on your generators, on your refrigeration, to pass out to what is known as your auxiliary watchkeeping certificates in them days. Whether they do that in the modern Navy, I do not know. And then you went for your leading hands rate. In them days, you couldn't become a leading hand unless you came home and went to the school in Plymouth or Portsmouth, wherever the case may be, the position you belonged in. But when the war started, there was no way they could send men home for these courses. So they made leading hands and acting POs temporary until they could come home and do these courses. But as the war went on, all over the world, they formed schools. For instead of the men coming home to England to do it, they done it in Alexandria, down in South America, South Africa, and in all other ports, Bermuda, all these places, they set up these schools so that they could put the men through their schools to become higher ratings. Now, the one in Alexandria was formed in the King's Palace, King Farouk's Palace, Summer Palace in Alexandria. They took over part of the palace and formed it into a naval school for men for passing for higher ratings, because there's such a large fleet there, and men never have the chance. They had one in Simonstown, in down at South Africa. I'm sorry. And all these sort of things.
Did you like the job that you were doing in 1938?
Definitely. I always loved engineering. And I've done it all my life.
What was the ship doing and what were you doing when war was declared?
At the time, just prior to the war, as far as our information was, all ships of the Royal Navy, when war was imminent, was given what they were called the emergency telegram. And ships were then all, in them days, were ordered to sea prior, I ain't quite sure whether it was a week or 10 days prior to any estimated start of hostilities. We put to sea, and our job was sent down to the Dutch West Indies off Curacao. On the way, at about 6:45 in the morning, we had the came over the tannoy, the ship's tannoy, and everything that war was declared. We then patrolled off Curacao, where a complete, or I should say, somewhere in the region of 6 or 7 German merchantmen were there loading and all that. And we patrolled off there for quite a few weeks, taking it in turns with other cruisers to keep the German ships bottled up. Occasionally they done a run, and then the old the system, which was known to all naval men, scuttling. You would chase them so long, and then as they saw there was any hope of capturing them, they would set fire to themselves and scuttle themselves. But the one funny thing in the point of that, nearly every morning we patrolled off Curacao, the ship was always off the main entrance to the harbour in the daybreak, and the German ships would come out from the inner harbour and play their hoist their flags and play their national anthem and then turn around and go back in again. So it used to be a ritual each morning nearly while that was going on. Well, then we would return. They moved the base from Bermuda to Jamaica, operational base. Bermuda then only became the repair base. Our operational base for the Caribbean and all around the Gulf of Mexico was then at Jamaica.
What do you remember happening next in the war?
Well, then we went patrolling off the Gulf of Mexico. America was not in the war at that time. And we were given information from the Americans that a German merchantman had come out of Veracruz in the Gulf of Mexico and was on the way home to Germany. Well, we intercepted her off Florida, and she went in right inside the 3-mile limit off Florida. Well, we were there patrolling up and down the whole of the Christmas of that. Now, the funny thing of that was, afterwards, the Battle of the River Plate, was that we were given information that the ship that we had gone into there and we had drove in to Florida was the ship that the Grass Bay was looking for supplies. And she had went, the Grass Bay then, because she didn't pick up this, went down. We were only one of the flotilla of cruisers on the West Indies station at that time that was in this position. And the Grass Bay went down so many hundred miles further out behind us. And lucky enough, we never met her. Otherwise, I'm afraid we wouldn't have been here today. Then she went south to Grass Bay and picked up the merchantmen, which then came about that our cruisers picked her up there. The Exeter and the Ajax and the Achilles. They were of the West Indies Squadron, which we were part of. But we were too far away to be intercepted into the battle.
What do you remember next in the war?
Then we, a few things happened which were fairly comical. We went back to Jamaica, and in beginning of 1940, I ain't quite sure of the date, was when Lord Tweedsmuir, Governor of Canada, died. He was known as Jack Buchan, the author. He was also a big author, the Governor General of Canada. And he died, and we were ordered to Halifax to pick up his ashes and bring them back to England. With the thing, we went to Halifax. And also, while we got there, we was winter time, and we came from the Caribbean right into dead winter in Halifax, snow, frozen roads. And when we picked up Lord Tweedsmuir, the Duchess of Bedford also came with us, the liner Duchess of Bedford, with a destroyer escort and one cruiser, and we were bringing the first contingent of Canadian Air Force people to England. Part way out, we had such bad weather that the destroyer's front gun, mast, boats and everything was stripped off her, and she had to turn around to go back. We carried on over in the gales, which flattened all our davits of our boats, broke the boats. We had very few lifeboats left time we came across. But the one thing that sticks in most of our minds was each day at rum time, the bosun pipes up spirits. On this particular day, he pipes up spirits, stand fast, Lord Tweedsmuir. And he was immediately taken and put into the cells.
For disrespect.
Pardon?
For disrespect,
the man was ashes was down in the gun room. Well, anyway, just the point of things that do become very thoughtful and very marked in our lifetime. Then we came, they sent us, when we got off Liverpool, which we never expected, we thought we would turn around to go back again, sent us into Plymouth, which was very good for 90% of us, because we were, in them days, most ships were what they call home bay ships. You were either Chatham, Portsmouth, or Plymouth. Irrespective of where you lived, you belonged to those places. Today, that's not so. I mean, you were chatty in the old days. They used to call it Chatty Chatham, and Pompey, and Plymouth, and Guz, and all this sort of thing. And every man belonged to that depot. There wasn't no mix-up. The ships were that way. You went into all sports and everything which belonged to your depot.
So there was rivalry between the...
Completely. Complete rivalry in sport and everything that you could think of. It made that way, which don't do today. But another thing today, they're not away from their mammies long enough or wives long enough to get to know anybody on ships. And also, with plenty of money, they can go ashore every night. We got paid once a month. In time, you bought your cigarettes and your washing gear and your cleaning gear. If you could see yourself able to go ashore once or twice a month, that was it. There was no money afforded to go to nightclubs or all these sort of things. We used to depend on what was known as free Harry Freeman's most of our life. I have a book here. It would be very interesting to read.
Well, we won't bother with it.
No. It would be very interesting, which was written for the ship while we were on the American station, called the Baron. And the Baron, to all Navy people, was anybody that paid for everything. And we were paid for colleges, breweries, everybody entertained us in them days, and that's how we got by. But getting on with the story, we came on into Plymouth after, and Lord Tweedsmuir's ashes was took off. We couldn't understand why we were kept here until one day, they give us 4 days leave, as far as I can remember, each. And then when we reported back, one day along come the dockyard trains alongside the ship on the seawall. Out got a couple of gentlemen with bowler hats and green aprons and nice black suits. And everybody of the lower ratings wondered what was going on. They put wooden chutes down to the deck of the ship. And next thing we know, little wooden boxes are coming down the chute to go down into the lower bomb room. And when we inquired what was in the little boxes, was blocks of solid gold. The amount of millions that was there, I have no clue. But it was the money to outpay for lease land, which we eventually found out, going to the Farmers Bank of New York. But the point of another funny thing in our lives, which this is the point, our bowler-hatted friend with a green apron in England putting the gold aboard. We sailed with all this gold to Halifax. When we got to Halifax, we thought World War III had started. There was mounted police, American G-men, Tommy guns in every man's hand. We couldn't even go to toilet on our own ship, and thus we had an escort. Everybody on the jetty was escorted by men with Tommy guns. It was just one complete utter difference to seeing the man with the bowler hat in England to seeing the state they took the gold off in America in them days. And then that was over. We went back down to the West Indies.
So the gold bullion was guarded on board by the Marines?
No, by nobody. It was just put down in the lower bomb room and left there.